for me, I speak about my faith way more in the climate movement than I do anywhere else. And so I see exactly how sharing the gospel and being a Christian links to this issue.
The Profile with Premier Christianity Magazine.
So, Laura, thanks so much for joining us on The Profile today. It's really brilliant to have an hour to sit and chat to you. I'd love you to start us off by we normally always ask all of our guests, tell us a little bit about yourself and about your faith journey. Were you raised in a Christian home? At what point did you come to know Jesus? How did it all start?
Good opening question. And yeah, I mean, my journey, I mean, I used to always sort of laugh and say I've got that boring like stock testimony that so many have, but of course we know that everybody's testimony is so precious to God, even if it maybe follows a bit of a similar track. But yeah, I grew up in a Christian family, so my immediate family, my mum, my dad, my brother, we all went to church and have faith individually, but also my wider family, you know, grandparents, lots of aunts, uncles, cousins all went to church, various different churches. And yeah, I grew up in that environment. And, you know, looking back to my childhood as well, I just loved going to things like Scripture Union camps and, you know, just having fun as well as being a part of church ministry. But like a lot of people at 17, I moved away, you know, I moved away from home, went to university. And I guess that was the first time I had to think for myself, mostly about what I was going to do on a Sunday morning. Where was I going to go? Was I going to go to church? What kind of church would I go to? What activities would I be getting involved in? So I would say that although I became a Christian when I was in my teenage years, my faith was really put to the test as a sort of 17, 18, 19 year old when I really had to start thinking about it for myself. And yeah, so going to university, that was really the first time I had to think for myself about what faith meant for me, what I was going to do in terms of getting involved in Christian activities and what church, if any, I was going to go to. So really, I think that for me was the first time my faith had ever been tested. And, you know, if I'm honest, didn't always go to church, you know, kind of opted out of a lot of these activities because it was this whole new world of being independent, living away, studying. But I would say that during that time, it was probably the most I've ever thought about faith because I was maybe a little bit more disconnected from the church bubble and the family Christian bubble that I was a part of. So even though I maybe wasn't active in my faith, I was thinking about it a lot and had lots of questions and found it a really good, challenging time to think about it. And, you know, as I sort of ended my time at university, that was when I really started to link what does it mean to be a Christian, to me personally, my faith, my work, my life, you know, everything that I was doing. And that's when I really sort of made that commitment again, I guess, to pursuing, you know, what it means to follow Jesus and, yeah, kind of be his hands and feet. And ever since then, that's, yeah, really been my almost like second journey into becoming a Christian. And ever since then have, yeah, really enjoyed looking at how I can serve in my workplace, in my community, in my church. And that's been, yeah, it's now a huge part of my life. But yeah, that's definitely a little bit of my testimony, which I know is so similar to lots of other people's. But of course, it's so special, you know, every single one of us who decides to follow Jesus.
Yeah, and I think that is the beauty, isn't it? It's kind of, we often talk about, you know, this Damascus Road experiences and the power of those testimonies, but actually that's not most of our stories. So for lots of people out there listening, it's beautiful to hear, isn't it? I grew up in a Christian family and that gave me a really great foundation. And then it took me a little time to translate that into what does this actually mean for me as an adult, as in like living independently. And that's definitely something I'm praying for my kids as they're in their first years of university this year. So that's super cool. It's lovely to hear that. Was there a particular element of your life that intersected with your faith in a way that made you, you know, during those times you're thinking, I'm not going to church regularly. What was it that drew you back in and said, do you know what, this is something I want in my life for the rest of my life and something I want to take seriously?
Well, this is where it cuts right into the work that I'm involved in. And that's because when I was at university, I studied geography and environmental science. And this was between 2014 and 2018. And actually, at the time, there was lots of kind of big global agreements happening around climate change. There was lots of stories of the impact of environmental pollution on communities. You know, it was actually a really busy time for somebody who is looking into all of these different issues. And I felt really passionately about the environment, about people, about the impacts that, you know, we were putting on communities around the world when it came to this kind of environmental destruction, really. But one of the things that was always missing was, where's the church in all of this? You know, I'd never really heard my church speak about the environment and how that impacts people. I'd never really heard about a church, you know, kind of engaging in these issues. And that was part of the reason why I felt like my faith was quite separate to the work that I was getting involved in. But what drew me back in, I mean, really bluntly, was an invitation to an event by my mum, right? So mums inviting their kids to things is a very powerful way of getting you like hooked back in. But my mum actually sent me this event that she'd found, and it was an event for young people, and it was run by Tear Fund, who are a Christian international development charity. And at the time they were running something called the Rubbish Campaign, and it was basically about plastic production, plastic pollution, and the pressures that that was putting on communities all around the world. You know, we're so lucky here, blessed here, to have waste management. So we don't have rubbish piling up in our streets. You know, we don't have those issues. But around the world, there's lots of communities that are being flooded by these products with nowhere to put any of their rubbish. And my mum just sent me this invitation and said, there's this really cool event happening. It's all about the environment and plastic and people. It's run by Tear Fund, who are like a Christian organization. And I knew who Tear Fund were because I grew up going to a church that supported them. But actually, she said, why don't you just go? It might be really interesting. And that was probably, yeah, a really big moment for me, because not only was it something that I was academically and kind of in a work sense interested in, it was something that at the heart of it was linking the Christian faith to the issues of, you know, environmental justice and, you know, loving our neighbor in the face of things like pollution and climate change. So that was really the first event that got me realizing, oh my goodness, you know, actually these two worlds do collide. They just don't collide everywhere. So how can I maybe help play a little bit more of a part in that? And so that really kind of set me off to rediscovering, you know, what does it mean for me to have a faith, and how could my work also intersect with the church more? And, you know, how can I put that forward? So yeah, the power of a mum sending an invitation to an event is definitely something that can be very powerful.
And the ability of most churches to potentially integrate our Monday to Friday with our Sunday mornings a little bit more. Because that's what I'm hearing you say is basically, I didn't, you know, there are often points in our lives where we struggle to say, how does what we do in church meet what I'm, my passions, my interests, my vocation, you know, the thing I'm doing Monday to Friday. Do you think that the church could do that better?
I think they could. And I know that LICC have done some great work in this space of, yeah, getting people to understand that church is not just for a Sunday, or your faith is not just for the edges of your life. And actually, we should be serving God in everything that we do. And that includes our work. And actually, the work that we do for many people is the biggest part of our week. You know, it's where we spend the most of our time. It's where we meet so many different people. And so I think that has been something that I have found really encouraging, is engaging with a lot of the resources that LICC have put out, but also lots of groups of people who have kind of popped up all over Scotland and the UK to almost help each other, to support each other in the way that, you know, what does it look like to be a Christian in your workplace, but also how does your actual work, you know, benefit the kingdom and link to, you know, what we're called to do as Christians. I was also part of a program run by the Evangelical Alliance called the Public Leadership Program. And it was a fantastic, like, year-long space to meet with other younger professionals, you know, people in their 20s and 30s, to be thinking about, what does it mean to be a public leader, be a public Christian leader? You know, what does it look like to be setting off into the world of, you know, work and faith? And I think those have been some really crucial things, because I don't think churches do the best job at engaging people to think that way. And it is something that's just so important, if nothing else, as a missional opportunity, right? We get to be in all these interesting spaces with colleagues, and we get to, you know, share our faith with them.
Do you think, Laura, that, like, as a young person, do you think it is more important for younger generations to feel that their faith and the rest of their life are integrated in that way?
I think it's really helpful, because otherwise it can feel like there's a separation. And especially going with, you know, what many young people do is when they get to that sort of 17, 18, 19 years old, they do move away. Now, I moved away for university, but they might move away for work. They might move away for a variety of different reasons. And so if you've always had church and faith in a little box over here, you know, it can be difficult when that transition happens to understand how it links to your whole life. And so I think that's absolutely something that we could be doing more of, you know, setting up young people to understand the kind of fullness of what it means to be a Christian and how that links to not even your work, but just your hobbies, you know, your community, all the activities that you get up to.
Yeah. And because we're seeing this like massive openness amongst Gen Z towards spirituality generally, not necessarily Christianity. And I think the challenge for the church is to make sure we make that case that, like, you know, what you're looking for, we have the answers to, like, Jesus is the answer. But I think in order to do that, you're right, we need to make it relevant to the things that people care about and the causes and the issues that are on young people's heart. And we know that a lot of young people have a great sense of social justice and really want to champion that and want to see the church standing up and doing the right thing. Now, for you, a lot of that revolves around the environment and climate care. How did that become the issue that you sort of, you know, directed your studies and your life and your activism towards? At what point did you go, this is the thing I'm going to champion?
I mean, for me, really, it was just growing up in high school and really enjoying the subject geography and feeling like that was something I wanted to do after school. I had no idea what job I wanted. So I sort of thought, you know, if I go and study something that I'm passionate about, that will hopefully lead me to lots of good opportunities. I know that, you know, I felt quite pressured to go to university. I went to one of those schools that just kind of shoved the form in your hand and said, you need to go somewhere. But, you know, for me, it worked out really well. So, you know, kind of followed the passion for the subject that I loved. You know, I just found it so fascinating to be able to walk past a geological feature and think, I know how that was formed. I understand how that works, you know. And being based in Scotland, you know, you're surrounded by beautiful water and ocean and rivers and mountains. And just, it was beautiful to be able to kind of learn more about this creation. But I think for me, when you go and learn a subject like that, you don't just learn about the beautiful, you know, natural features of the planet. You also learn about how we are changing the planet, how we are impacting the surface of the earth, how we're changing land, building more, operating industries, and of course, you know, pushing the planet really to the boundaries when it comes to things like the amount of fossil fuels we're using or the pollution that is happening because of the lifestyles and the societies that we've built. And I think when you learn that, you can't look away. You really do feel like, okay, I want to somehow help, you know, mitigate these impacts. And really for me as well, I think when traditionally when we talk about climate change, you might think of an ice cap or a polar bear or the Amazon rainforest and a monkey or something like that. And those are really important parts of the world and help things operate. But there's also this social justice side to it, because there's people who live all around the world who are being impacted by issues like climate change, water pollution, air pollution. So it's also this justice issue where we need to make sure that people are not, you know, feeling the brunt of all of these different issues. And so I think that's for me where I knew I wanted my work to sit in this space. Not just, I mean, I want to care for the creation because it's a beautiful part of what, you know, God made, but also because people, you know, are facing the brunt of all of these different impacts. And we do have the solutions to change the way that we, you know, the world works. And I want to just hopefully play a small part in that.
So tell us a little bit about what that journey's looked like for you over the last few years. You're like, I've had a short look at your bio. It looks very impressive. You sit on numbers of councils and have won numerous awards. Who is Less Waste Laura and what does she do?
It's a good question. So I guess for me, when I was actually finishing up my degree, I was in my final year and I really wasn't sure what was coming next. Like, I wasn't sure what job I was going to get. I wasn't sure what that would look like. But I decided to set myself a New Year's resolution to kind of carry me over graduating and finishing and just have something to focus on. And it's because I really felt like I was learning a lot of this stuff. But then I was looking at my own life thinking, do I actually do anything myself, you know, to really make even just small changes? Not because it's going to save the planet, me alone, but, you know, what could I do more of? So in 2018, on the 1st of January, I started this New Year's resolution to just try and live out more of the kind of environmental principles that I felt really strongly. And so, yeah, I started to look at how much waste I was producing. I started to look at where I was buying things from, you know, my foods, my clothes. I was looking at the impact that I was having on the earth and just trying to make small changes to think about what I could do a little bit more sustainably. But I realized really quickly, I think it was, you know, only about halfway through the month of January, that loads of other people were interested. You know, people were asking me like, where are you finding all this information? Or could you tell me a bit more about what I could do? Have you got any products that you would recommend that would help me reduce my waste? And so I thought I should start writing this down, almost like documenting the journey. And that's where Less Waste Laura came from. You know, it came from starting this New Year's resolution, documenting what I was up to, but also sharing the information that went alongside it. It wasn't just like, here's a bamboo toothbrush. It was like, here's a bamboo toothbrush and here's a little bit of like why that's important. Or, you know, here's some organizations that are doing some interesting work in this space and this is why this is really important. So I was kind of combining lifestyle action with a bit of what I'd learned in academia and a little bit of campaigning, you know, where we wanted to kind of push governments and businesses better. And really over the years that has grown. So, you know, I left university, I ended up doing a master's, so one more year. I then worked for Tier Fund, actually. It was like a full circle moment. Went and worked for Tier Fund, that organization that got me like back involved in all this kind of work and was part of my faith journey. Worked for them for a good number of years, and actually went to the COP26, which was the UN climate summit in Glasgow with them. And I'm now back in academia, almost finished a PhD. So, you know, I've been on this journey of kind of research, academia, working in the third sector, campaigning, advocacy, and doing loads of sort of online stuff, you know, just trying to bring people along. And really it all just came out of wanting to just live out what I felt passionate about, even just in the small lifestyle actions, which I think is really important.
And how does your faith intersect with that? Is it easy to say in the academic and environmental and political spaces that you move in, this is motivated by my Christian faith? Or do you tend to stay away from that message and try to focus on this is why all of us should care for the planet? How do you approach it and how does it intersect?
I mean, a mixture of both. And, you know, quite often if you get the privilege of like sitting on a panel or something, quite often people ask you, why are you passionate about this? So it's like a great opening way of saying, well, actually, I'm passionate because, yeah, love the subject at school, enjoy being outside, you know, just feel really passionate. But also you can say, you know, my faith is a huge driver of it. And I think that is an easy in terms of being able to share that. Obviously, in some spaces, that's easier than others. But a lot of people do really find it interesting to know what has been the motivation for stepping into this space. But one of the things I find most interesting is that when I say that, when I say, you know, I'm a Christian, and I feel like when I read the Bible, or, you know, when I'm kind of thinking about my faith, I obviously can see the call for all of us, right? Like, it's not just me that's been called to this, it's all of us to be caring for creation and caring for our neighbours. Quite often people are like, oh, I don't really see the church involved in this space, or like, oh, that's, you know, unusual. It's not something I've heard before. So I think there's a lot of work we need to do more broadly to actually put the church into the heart of this space, because yeah, I don't think the church you know, has been that vocal. There's obviously lots of individuals and groups and campaigns and things that have, but I think broadly speaking, you know, within the wider environmental movement, they don't see the church or Christians as like a strong part of the work that they're trying to do. So sometimes it is quite a surprising conversation when you get to talk about it.
So what would you like to see the church doing more of in order to rectify that?
Lots of things. and there's different levels to it, right? So, I mean, easy wins, just in terms of like churches can actually just be a bit more sustainable themselves. We could just live out some of these principles of creation care. A lot of churches have big buildings with big energy use, you know, a lot of waste. We are able to just make some small changes that actually at scale can have a huge impact. I'm in a bit of a battle with my church at the moment. Maybe battle's too strong a word. I'm in a conversation with my church around single use plastic communion cups, because we use single use ones. We throw them away every week. And I think it's going to be interesting to see if we can change to reusable glass ones. And there was lots of reasons given why we might not be able to do that. But it really shocked me to learn that we use up to 10,000 a year, which
just in your church,
just in my church, which is
wow.
And so, you know, there's little things like that. And I know it sounds so silly, but actually at one church making like a few different changes can make a big difference. But I think also at the heart of it, it's about going beyond the kind of lifestyle actions as a building, as a church, as a congregation. Really important to do that, but it's also trying to get into the heart of the congregation to say, like, why is it important for us to, one, look after creation, but two, see that this is something that connects to people, and actually get us to think, why is it that we live the way we live? Why is it that our society is built in the way that it's built? What more can we do to try and actually get to the root and the heart of this problem? And I think that's something where I've seen churches do great kind of sermon series, or kind of have courses that they run. And I don't mean just do like a tick box, we've got an eco group and they're the ones that sort out the recycling. I mean actually get to the heart of everybody in the congregation, like seeing how this all links together. So I think there's lots that can happen, and also praying for these issues, you know, these communities and people and individuals that are impacted by this stuff, you know, making sure that we keep them close to our prayers, and recognize that the church has a role. And, you know, there's been so many influential faith leaders in the climate space, but I think a lot more of that could happen locally. You know, I think when we've had things like the United Nations COP conferences, the Archbishop of Canterbury or the Pope, you know, have sort of engaged at that high level. But what actually is happening on the ground, you know, how are we engaging locally with a lot of these issues, and what role could our churches play?
It's interesting, isn't it? I think like, as a journalist, we're aware that the things we report on, you know, we have this idea within news that the things that are furthest away from us feel the less relevant, and then people find it harder to engage with those issues. So like you were saying, I think it's sometimes difficult to keep it at the front and center of people's minds, like when you read about the rubbish dumps in Africa. Or I was reading the other day a story on the BBC about a pile of clothing waste in the northern desert in Chile. They seem so far away that we forget, when we're out shopping on a Saturday afternoon and picking up our bargains from Primark, that is the actual consequence. What is it that you would like to see change for individual Christians that moves a little bit closer to home?
I mean, it's a good one, and I think part of it is about especially the consumption stuff, because I think this is a big one where, like, I would love for people to be reducing the amount of waste that they are creating and reducing the amount of stuff that they're buying, because, you know, a lot of it is just made from plastic. You know, it's not good for us, not good for the planet, not good for our health. But there is also this impact, as you say, of like, where does our waste actually go? And do we see that, like, we are a player in that? And I think also getting to the heart of, why do we need so much stuff? And actually asking ourselves that. And I know that for so many people, it gets to the weekend, and guess what? Like, it's just a habit to go out and buy stuff. And, you know, a lot of the time that's what our local areas are set up to do, right? But actually, like, what could we do just a little bit differently? Why do we feel the need to be constantly buying loads of new stuff? Is that where we see worth? Is that where we see value? And then when we do need stuff, asking, well, where can I get this? You know, is there a way of buying this product in a way that is supporting a small business or supporting, you know, a cooperative somewhere globally that is, you know, doing great work with local communities. I think it's just about getting people to slow down and sort of ask those questions about how much stuff do we need? Where are we buying things? And, you know, there's that classic quote about, you know, every time you spend your money, you're casting a vote for the kind of world that you want to live in. And it's true. It really is true. You know, we've got so much power as consumers to shift the way that consumption works, you know, supporting the businesses that we have. And it's actually really easy. It's just really, really easy to be sustainable when you kind of have that mindset shift, because you don't feel like you have to be part of this fast-paced, you know, industry where you're buying lots of things. So I think a lot of it is about that reflection time. You know, it's not about here's my list of 100 things that you can now go and swap and buy. It's actually about, I want you to do the work to kind of think about how much stuff do we feel we need, and where are we getting it, and how important is that as a Christian, you know, to be considering material stuff and the impact that we have, and also just being connected, right? Don't disconnect when you maybe see some of these news stories flash up on your screen. You know, try and not think that it's somewhere really far away, but actually try and understand it. And I mean, that clothing dump that you've mentioned, there's been some incredible journalists that have gone out and explored it. And guess what? All the clothes are from places like Marks and Spencer's and Primark, right? Like, it's our clothes. You know, it's not stuff that's from Chile. It's stuff that's been shipped from here. And so just, yeah, really reflecting on that, and just, yeah, kind of considering, you know, what you would want to do in response to these kind of stories.
Hi, it's Sam Hales, editor of Premier Christianity magazine. I'm proud to say we are celebrating our 60th anniversary. From our beginnings as Buzz in the 1960s to the vibrant multi-platform magazine we are today, our commitment to connecting faith with the world around us has never changed. To mark the occasion, we have a special offer of 12 months for half price. That's just £24 for print and digital access. Subscribe today at premierchristianity.com. Automatically renews at £47.99.
What would you say to someone who says, Laura, that all sounds great, but let's be frank, buying organic local food, shopping sustainably, buying from local makers, I would love to do that, but honestly, it's, you know, twice the price. There is a budget constraint, and some people would argue, well, we just need to feed people and we need food to be affordable, especially now at the time of cost of living crisis. How do we address that sort of conflict?
I mean, partly for the majority of people, that is not a conflict. And I think people do hide behind that. So my massive caveat is that for many, many people in the UK, budget constraints are a huge issue, and we need government intervention to help, because people are not able to get good, nutritious, fresh food that is affordable, right? So we do acknowledge that. But most of the time, the people that I have this conversation with have more than enough resource to make some of these switches. But also, they are looking at this conversation through a very narrow lens, because what they are trying to do is take their exact lifestyle now and replicate it with, and I'm using air quotes, like organic, sustainable, natural brands. You can't really do that. You have to look at a kind of holistic lifestyle change. So for me, and I, you know, I started looking into all this when I was a student. I guess I did have a lot of disposable income because I didn't have any dependents. Like, I didn't have a mortgage. I didn't have any of that. But, you know, I started this when I didn't have a huge amount of income behind me to make these changes. But one of the things that I found is that, yes, there are items that are a little bit more expensive when you buy them organic, sustainable, or natural. But because you are drastically changing the rest of your lifestyle, you are saving money in so many other places. And I'll give you like a classic example. So I'm now of that age where every summer I've got tons of weddings because everybody's getting married. Love it. I love a wedding and it's just fantastic. Now, a few years ago, that would have meant buying multiple brand new outfits for all of these weddings. And that's something that is a huge cost to many people. But now, one of my favorite things that's a sustainable swap is renting. So you can rent occasion wear. You can rent dresses for weddings or graduations or just any sort of fancy occasion. And instead of buying something that's, you know, 50, 60, 70 plus pounds, you're actually only spending about £20, and you can rent it for, you know, a month or whatever, and use it for those weddings and then send it back. So that's like one example, though, of where you can save money because you're switching. And there's loads of stuff, right? Like, I'm not just pulling out one example and hoping that I can get away with it. You know, there's so many things that I do that are saving me money because it's about sustainability, it's about consumption. Another great one, when I moved to do my PhD, again, you know, I lived in Dundee at the time, and I had to do some like DIY in my flat. And I remember thinking, right, I need a power drill because I need to put up some kind of heavy pictures and things. So I went to B&Q, went to the power tool section and thought, oh my goodness, this is all so expensive. And I'm also not really sure like what I'm supposed to be buying. So I left and thought, I'll do a bit more research and then come back. And when I was speaking to a colleague, they said, oh, have you never heard of the Dundee Tool Library? They'd definitely be able to help you out. And so this is this idea of, I mean, it was tools there, but there's lots of these library of things popping up where instead of every single person having to go and buy a power drill, you can go to the tool library, you pay a little membership, you sometimes pay a little fee for your what you're going to borrow, and then you take it home. And guess what? You know, you're saving all of that money. And I think, you know, these kind of community organizations, opportunities, it's a fantastic way for people to save money, right? Because I didn't have to go and buy a power drill, you know, just to use it for 5 minutes. I was able to go support one of these community initiatives, save money, also got a lesson in how to not electrocute myself. So that was priceless. But actually, you know, there's lots of things like this where it's challenging, first of all, the need for us to own and buy everything, but it's also saving us lots of money. And so when I look across my lifestyle, there are so many ways that I am saving money. And there are so many ways that I'm also spending a little bit more money to support businesses, small businesses, products that I want to, because they are more sustainable and more natural. But over my whole lifestyle, I see that I massively am saving money. And I think that's always what I try to say to people, is actually, if you're just looking at it through the lens of continually buying lots of new stuff that is quote unquote sustainable, of course it's going to look like it's incredibly expensive, but you have to take a step back and see the full picture. And of course, we also then need to look at, for those who can't, you know, for those who are unable to opt into a lot of these sustainable brands because they're more expensive, actually, that's a bigger problem. That's much wider. And we need to be engaging with governments and businesses to be addressing that. So it's really important to talk about the economics of all of this, but it's also a bit of a red herring. And I think also, you know, when we go to the shops and we find something that's really cheap, somebody is paying that cost. It's not us, right? But somebody is being exploited in a supply chain for you to be able to get that thing cheaply delivered to your house the next door. And that's something that we really have to reflect on. But no, certainly, you know, I find it really encouraging. And, you know, I think there's even just like silly examples. But I remember when I first started out, I bought like reusable kitchen rolls. So this was like nearly 10 years ago, I bought this reusable kitchen roll. I think when I bought it, it was like £20. And I remember thinking, oh my goodness, that's so expensive. But I've had it for 10 years. Like, I've still got all this reusable kitchen roll that you just chuck into your washing machine. So, you know, I've not had to buy kitchen roll in 10 years and like think of all the money that saved. Or I remember I got like a reusable menstrual cup, right? And again, it was around £20 at the time. And I thought, oh my goodness, that's so much more expensive than a packet of tampons or a packet of pads. But I've had it again for a decade. And so you think, well, actually, no, it's not £20, you know, every time you buy it, because you only buy it once. And so I think part of it is like getting people to just see like all the different ways that you can save money, and then wanting to invest your money well in these sustainable products where possible.
Now, I think for anyone who leads in a certain area by their lifestyle or in the campaigning work they do, there is always that question of how do I make sure my own personal life has the integrity that matches what I'm saying publicly. Have there ever been any areas for you that have been challenging or hard to change? Or has this all just felt so passionate that you know, it's all a joy?
No, totally. Loads. I mean, there's loads. Food's a big one because, like, food is so social. And so if you're thinking, I want to change my diet to maybe be a bit more sustainable, at times that can maybe feel limiting if you're cutting out certain products or, you know, deciding what to do and, you know, navigating family life and kind of social opportunities with, oh, I really want to be a bit more sustainable with what I'm eating. So food's definitely been a big one, and that's changed over the years in terms of what that's looked like. Traveling is a big one as well. You know, it's really easy to kind of think about like staycations and things like that. But there's, you know, for work, I have to take flights. I travel internationally, ironically, to climate conferences and like that. I'm the first one to say that, you feel a bit like a hypocrite jumping on a plane to talk about climate change. But, you know, there are these like real things that can be quite difficult. So there's loads of stuff about my lifestyle that I would still, you know, like to try and make more sustainable. But I think the point is, it's not about perfection. It's just about trying, you know, it's just about saying, here's where I'm going to make the most difference. But, you know, at the end of the day, I think there's so much that we can do. And it's just constantly about, you know, avoiding what feels like the easy option and just saying, even if it takes 5 minutes out of my day, I'm going to make sure that I do that thing to, whether it's separate your recycling or just think a little bit more about where I could get something. But of course, there's areas that I'm not perfect in. And there's, you know, times in life where, like, I remember I was walking through the city centre of Edinburgh and like the sole of my shoe fell off, right? These like trainers that I'd bought in a charity shop, the sole literally came away and I thought, I need to buy a new pair of shoes. I'm going to just have to go into the first shop that I come across. Okay. So there's also times where like stuff like that happens and then, you know, you just have to live with it. So yeah, there's always going to be things that you want to do better, but it's a journey, right? And it's like it's something that we can all just kind of keep working at.
And what's your hope for the next generation? For like, what is, you know, the heart and soul behind what you're campaigning for? What are the big changes you'd like to see?
There's loads. I mean, I guess like there's lots that I want from different levels as well. You know, I think like from government level, you know, you want countries to take seriously things like, I mean, I hate the term net zero because I think it's just kind of been used as a bit of a slogan. But, you know, I want countries to take seriously this amazing opportunity that we have to create clean energy and to create industries where young people can step into the workforce and work in these industries. Like that's something I'm really passionate about. Really passionate about is protecting like what green space we have. And I think part of that is also because the green space that you have around your home is like so important for your well-being. You know, having safe places to go and walk and enjoy nature, and like we should just be trying to protect those areas, even if it's in the middle of a concrete jungle, just saying that that urban little green park is really important. So I think that is something that, you know, I want to see. But I think in terms of like cultural change, I think something that, and this is kind of going back to what we spoke about when it came to like buying and consumption and stuff, is I just want people to live and not feel like they have to fill their life up with stuff and actually just feel disconnected to material things and just recognize that life is so much more than what you've got in your cupboards, on your shelves, in your wardrobe. And actually there's ways of being able to enjoy life and express yourself and enjoy things like fashion, but without contributing so much to these like really harmful industries. So there's a bit of that kind of lifestyle cultural change as well.
And I think for Christians, that has a sort of quite a spiritual angle on it as well, doesn't it? You know, there is that question, are we somehow filling a hole in our heart with the things that we can buy?
Massively. And I think that's where a lot of this reflection, you know, wants to come in. And actually it's about, you know, saying, yeah, what drives us every day, day to day, and how can we be reflecting on that? And I think that's where the kind of spiritual angle comes in really well. And that's why, you know, going back to one of your first questions, like what can the church do? Like, yeah, it's really important for the church to make changes to be more sustainable, but I also want churches to get at the heart of the issues. You know, I don't just want them to do an eco service once a year as a tick box exercise. I want them to get to the heart of all of these issues so that people can have that time to reflect and really consider what they could do in response to these issues.
And did you feel like God had to change your heart a little bit on that journey?
Yeah. And as I say, like, you know, I studied this stuff. This was my world, but I didn't necessarily live it out personally. You know, I had a lot of these values, but then I was thinking, actually, like, what is it that I'm doing, even just myself, to make a small bit of difference? And that's why I started that New Year's resolution. That's why I started looking at my lifestyle. I started looking at where I was spending my money, what businesses I was supporting, what I was doing. And I think that was something that, yeah, I really had to think about as well, because I thought it was really great that I'm interested in these topics, but what am I actually doing about it?
Mm. And obviously we're living in an interesting time in history at the moment. There's, you know, we've just gone through the local elections. There are wars happening all over the place. The price of oil is going up. There's a cost of living crisis. You know, what is it that you're hopeful for in the middle of that? And what are the things that most concern you? And how would you like to see the church addressing them?
That's a tough one as well, because I think it can be difficult. It can be difficult. The environmental space as well can be quite hopeless. You know, it can be driven by a lot of anger and negativity. And so I think my hope is in so many local initiatives that are just popping up all over the place. And it might sound trivial, but actually there's just so many great things happening with local community groups, with volunteers just giving up their time, whether that's to clean up their streets with litter picking teams, or whether that's, you know, community projects, you know, looking at what they can do for nature and biodiversity, or organizations like these little tool libraries and repair cafes popping up. You know, that gives me hope, because it shows that people are willing to give their time almost exclusively as volunteers to kind of help combat not just environmental issues, but, you know, community cohesion, and really kind of commit to these things. So that gives me hope, is like seeing the small change. It's obviously very encouraging when you see the huge statistics about, you know, we've broken records in terms of how much renewable energy we've done, or, you know, countries making commitments. But it's that local stories that really give me hope. And I think the church could do more. I think the church could do more to open its doors, to offer these kind of spaces, to actually contribute to these issues well. But also I think the church can really get to the heart of this issue with its congregations and really be asking, like, how do we be different in this world? How do we look different? How do we sound different? How do we live out a life for God in this world when we do have all of these, like, big things happening? How do we contribute well? So I think it's just about trying to get the church to not see this as a secondary issue that's a really nice to have if we've got time, but actually seeing that this is part of the gospel. This is actually living out what God has called us to do in their community, in their local area. You know, what can they be doing? And of course, for those that are maybe part of bigger denominations, and what could we do united? You know, how could we be kind of making sure that we're planting our flag in this space is some of the things that I would love to see.
And does that look like, you know, protesting, boycotting firms that, you know, large denomination pension funds get invested in, and that kind of thing?
Yeah, there's loads. I mean, I think there's been a lot of work done in the divestment space, so with banks and pensions, and I think that's something that's really encouraging to see. And actually it's funny, it's one of the most boring things in terms of like action, but it's probably one of the most impactful things. I think it's also about looking at procurement, looking at where you get your stuff from, you know, just looking at your building and actually what you can be doing. But I also think it's about leadership. So actually how to be leaders in your communities and be influencing a lot of this change and positively contributing to consultations that your local authority might be putting on when trying to think about different initiatives. A lot of it is that getting to the heart. And look, I mean, protesting has been a really important part of change, not just within the environmental movement, but for so many other things. You know, we have just had these elections, and me and you got the chance to vote because people protested many, many years before we were ever around. And I think there are times where it is important to raise our voices, but there's also lots of other things that can be done as well. So there's not one set of things that we have to do to make this change. There's lots of opportunities. And I think it's about church leaders, it's about congregations, it's about communities really reflecting on what they have in their sphere of influence and what they can be doing. And look, there's also lots of organizations they can support. There's organizations like Tear Fund, you know, there's organizations that are doing the work around the world to make a difference. So if nothing else, we can give, you know, we can support charities, we can support organizations and be praying. You know, these are all things that churches can be doing. There's so much, which is one of the real positives about what we can be doing to make a difference.
And what would you say to those churches that say our priority is the gospel? Like the church should be focusing every ounce of money and energy it has on saving souls, and the rest of it, you know, like we can leave that to God, basically.
Great. Well, I would say that, this is something that I come across all the time. And I sometimes just wonder what gospel they're reading that excludes, you know, caring for what is putting people under pressure. And I think a lot about, you know, how do we actually talk to people about Jesus? How do we share the message of the gospel? Here is this whole great sector or, you know, movement that really needs hope, needs Jesus, needs to hear the Christian message. And if you're opting out of that space, what a sad loss of a missional opportunity. But also, when you read the gospel, it's not just about one person. It's not just about me. It's about the whole world. It's about everyone. It's about all of creation, the reconciliation of all things. And also recognizing that when we want to speak to people about these issues, we have to understand all of the pressures that they are under, understanding all of the conditions and actually speaking into that. So it's a hard one. And if I'm honest, I don't think I've cracked a good answer to it, because there's still churches that I try and speak to that are just not budging, not moving. And it can be really frustrating, because for me, I speak about my faith way more in the climate movement than I do anywhere else. And so I see exactly how sharing the gospel and being a Christian links to this issue. But unfortunately, that's not where everyone does. And I think that's the work that we have to do. And yeah, it's something that constantly I'm trying to figure out what is the best way to have the conversation, what is the best response to exactly the question you've got. And sometimes it just takes time. And I think that that's the really difficult part. But ultimately, I just try and make sure that I'm saying, this is not a fringe issue, a secondary issue. This is not something that is either trying to replace the gospel. This is something that is part of the gospel. And we have to really look at our theology, and we also have to look at the reality of the communities and the world around us to see that how we live out our lives as Christians and how we actually do the work of the gospel, share the gospel, includes this really important topic. And hopefully bring people on that journey. But I don't think it's something that I can convince a church leader of over one coffee. I think it is a journey, and that's something that is a challenge.
Mm. But do you think it genuinely puts certain people off of church? Like they're like, you're not taking this seriously, and therefore I will not take this faith seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And I think when you look at people who use faith, and in particular Christian faith, as a reason to not act for climate change, I mean, what message does that send to the people that are in this movement and are sometimes curious, like curious about faith and spirituality? Absolutely. You know, I think it's something, and the church has done a lot of damage, and often I have to stand up to that. You know, people say, well, you talk about being a Christian, but I saw that this church did this or said this, or and I think, great, you know, I have to now defend this, or I have to try and speak to them about, you know, the fact that there is division within the Christian community around how to act on this. So I know it puts people off. I've had conversations about how damaging it is, and I think that's something that is really frustrating. But I've also seen churches doing incredible things, and Christians doing incredible things. And I think that's also important to say that, you know, there are amazing organizations that do step faithfully into this space and do take on the battles from all sides. And I think that's something that we need to encourage.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much, Laura. It's been an absolute joy to speak to you today.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on.
You've been listening to The Profile in association with Premier Christianity Magazine.